This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 242, brought to you by Comedy Central's Ugly Americans, in stock trades, and iFanboy listeners exactly like you.
New York, you're safer. And you're wasting my time. Our records all show you were filthy but fine. But they shuttered your stores when you opened the doors to the cops who were bored once they'd run out of crime.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 242. That number feels special, but I'm not sure why. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
Everybody.
Hello. Hello. Hey, how you doing?
Hello? Hello? Who is this? We're all in New York.
Yeah, we are, actually. Yeah, that's odd.
What is the one word that we can use to describe New York right now?
Hot. I got off the plane this morning, and I was just like, God damn it.
You were even here Wednesday and Tuesday.
No, yeah, I was
it's
miserable.
It's cool today.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I put a park on.
Yeah.
At iFanboy.com, we like comics and complaining about the heat. I don't know why we live here. We read comics, and every week we read a bunch of them, and then one of us picks the one that they thought was best. They call that the pick of the week. They write about it up on the website. We talk about it here. We talk about the other books from the week. We do some letters. We make some jokes. We have some good times, maybe a drink or two. That's how it works. Also, sometimes the site gets infected.
Yes. Ron? So, yeah, real quickly, we just want to address those of you who listen to the podcast who use iFanboy.com. You might have noticed last week now on Wednesday and Thursday there were some problems on iFanboy.com. There was some malware warnings. Some of your virus scans were going off, things like that. Wrote a big post up on iFanboy.com, which will still be up. We'll probably take it down on Monday or Tuesday, so catch that while you can. But just wanted to apologize to anybody who came to iFanboy.com, had a problem. Turns out there was a little bit of malicious code that we got attacked along with some other comic sites like Bleeding Cool. I think Comic Space got attacked. I think a couple of them. There was a exploit in our the software that serves our banner ads that was serving some malicious code. We found it. We took it down. Unfortunately, Google noticed and they blocked us, but then we worked with them to get that lifted. Now everything's perfect. It's safe. It's okay to come to iFanboy, and we apologize.
And right now, we are ad-free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
that site looks naked.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Weird. I was like, what's wrong?
But anyway, so apologies to anybody who might have been inconvenienced by that, but I want to assure everybody that it's totally safe to come to the site now, and we, you know, apologize.
Except for the opinions on the site.
We have no responsibility for.
Does Graphically know we're ad-free?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
We are also going to – we're talking about the books in the week. So that was the worst transition in the history of broadcasting. Watch out for spoilers. We're talking about the books that have. We have a lot of books to talk about, so we're going to get right to it. But if you haven't read them, come back later. You'll probably dig it more, unless you don't care about that sort of thing. And then just fly blind, baby. That's how it works.
Roll
Ron,
with it.
You had a task.
Man, goddammit. Not only did books come out on Thursday, screwing up everything.
Screws up everything.
Not only that, but I bought 20 books. And on top of that, 9 of them were number one issues. And on top of that, like more than half of those number one issues were all done by like A-list creators, and there were like books I've been waiting for and really excited about. It was not easy this week.
And on top of that, you had a plane to catch.
On top of that, I had a plane to catch. On top of that, the site was dying. It was like it was. Listen, I had a bad Thursday, everybody.
It so helps that comics were really good, though.
Yeah,
one of those like I thought last week was actually like. I don't think I gave anything higher than a 4 last week. So this week.
Yeah. Well, I got to admit, if you went to iFanboy.com, if you read my review of the pick of the week, which is Scarlet number 1, hopefully it came across that really good comics saved my day on Thursday. So I'm very appreciative for that. But yeah, so I ended up going with Scarlet number 1 as the pick of the week. And it was a close call between a couple other ones that we're going to talk about in a little bit. Really, like, you know, I made the comparison in my review to I'm a big fan of a musician who went away for a while and then came back in the mid-2000s with a new record after like 8 years of being off, and it was like that anxiety, is this going to be good, is it going to be alright, you know. And I realized this week that Bendis hasn't released anything new creator owned for 10 years. He's been all Marvel since 2000 pretty much.
It's a long time.
So I was like, oh, does he still have it? Is it going to be all Marvel tainted? Is it going to be, you know, like, ugh. And then on top of that, I haven't really loved Maleev's recent work. I didn't like Spider-Woman. We've talked about it before. I thought it was really stiff, and I thought it was, you know, not as good as the Daredevil work that I remembered. So when I picked up Scarlet, I kind of read it, you know, kind of very tentatively, and I took my sweet time reading it, even though I didn't have a lot of time on Thursday. But this one I took the time. I read it closely. I tried to pour in every page, every panel, and when I finished reading it, I immediately just went to the front and read it again. And I didn't realize I was reading it again until like halfway through. I'm like, wait, why am I reading it again? I'm reading it again because I realized it was so good and it grabbed me on some level. I compare this to, I could see this as a really good indie movie, this issue. Or this comic feels like an indie movie to me. And then in terms of that, it's a medium that you're familiar with. It's a delivery of a story that you're familiar with. But the creators are doing something a little different, a little edgy, a little more, you know, off the beaten path. And that, for me personally, I get really excited by that. The comic book starts off with the main character, Scarlet, the redheaded girl, killing a cop. And it's kind of brutal. And it's kind of, you know, kind of off-putting. And then immediately by the third page, it starts off in the second page, but it's mainly in the third page, Bendis decides to break the fourth wall and have her talk to you, the reader. And he worked with Chris Eliopoulos, the letterer, in a subtle manner to make that fourth wall breaking done with like square word balloons as opposed to round word balloons. And for a moment, I had to think. I was like, okay, why did the word balloons change? And then I realized what was happening. I'm like, okay, cool, I'll go with it. Now, I'm guessing a lot of people might have a problem with this, and I'm guessing maybe people on this podcast may have a problem with it, but I'm sure we'll get that. But I really enjoyed it, and I really liked it. There's a great three-page sequence in here that kind of runs through the high points of Scarlet's life, which I thought was awesome. Just felt really, felt what I would expect from an indie comic. This isn't the kind of thing that you can get away with in a superhero comic or a mainstream comic.
They kind of did it in a Spider-Man comic a couple years ago, but it was pretty unique.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, at the end of this issue, I don't really know what this comic is about. I don't know where it's going to go. All I know is that this Scarlet Girl had something, you know, had a big wrong in her life. Her boyfriend was killed by a cop, and she realized that the world sucks, and now she's armed herself, and she's taking it upon herself to set things right. And so where the rest of the series goes, I have no idea. But as a pilot episode, like I also compared it to like a TV show, like for a first episode, it grabbed me, and I want to know who she is, what's going to happen, and, you know, kind of and it filled me with that excitement that I felt when I first read Bendis's indie work in the late 90s. Felt very Jinx-y to me. Felt very, his earlier work.
She's Lady Cop Punisher.
Yeah, basically. Lady Cop Punisher without, and not in a world of superheroes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that's what it seems like.
And as far as the art goes, and I'll admit, there were pages where I went, you know, Maleev. You know, like there were a couple of pages that look straight up. Like there's a fine line between what Maleev is doing and Fumetti, which is like the Italian photo comic style. There's a couple pages where I'm like, oh, he's just tracing a photo. It's obvious. But then there were a couple pages that were really pretty. And like that three page sequence was really nice. And the last two page spread was really nice. So, you know, like the art didn't bother me as much as Spider-Woman. It definitely didn't feel as stiff to me. It felt a little more fluid. It felt a little more action-y. But
I don't know if my tastes have changed since Daredevil, or if he has gotten more obvious about his style and how he does it. But I find it like I'm enjoying it less and less. I knocked this down a star because of the art.
Yeah, well, what I kind of realize is that, you know, this is more. I look at it more as the challenging art. You know, like I'm challenged to like it. You know, I'm challenged to absorb it and to do something with it, as opposed to just accepting it. Which, whether I like it or not, that's part of the kind of adventure, and I like that getting challenged.
I think the color is really good. Who colored this? I guess he did. I think he's good at putting it together, but at the end of the day, it's not my favorite kind of style anymore. You know, I don't like the tracing style.
I don't know what's different between what he did on Daredevil and this. That's my. I need to go back.
I think that it was a darker book. There's a lot more shadowing, so it's harder to tell that you're tracing.
There wasn't as many outlines.
Yeah, and it helps they have costumes. So he's actually got to draw that stuff because you can't trace costumes. Yeah. So here it was a lot more obvious that this is. And there's a lot of photographs taken, and there's a lot. And I just don't particularly like that style as much as I would have been okay with it in the past.
It's so funny, like my tastes have totally gotten to the point where like my favorite artists are the ones who are almost the most sort of cartoony. You know, like I'm thinking of like Somni or Peter Schneeberg, or you know, like just the really basic stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the polar opposite of this, really. Except also Jim Lee is the polar opposite of that, and I'm not sure how that works. Three poles.
There's many poles.
There's three poles. That's what she... No. I couldn't help it. Yeah, you know what's funny is I think I know what you're talking about when you say there were some pages that you dug more than others. Like,
yes.
I'm going to guess about page 4 and 5, which is basically a bunch of shots of her walking and talking.
Let me check. And, there was one... Yeah, no, actually, I didn't mind those as much because I actually found whoever the model is. I was gonna say,
like, really, a lot of this pick, I was like, oh, it's a short-haired girl.
Yeah,
with red hair.
Yeah,
it's not. This is not rocket science here, people. That's where the star from.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, but
this girl exists. She's real somewhere.
Yeah, I would like to find her. No, actually, once the cops came and were roughing up her friends. Like, there's the page where the cop is grabbing her boyfriend and then put her arms behind her back, like that page where when he like kind of was patting her down. It's a left side of page. I don't know what page number it is. That one, I was like, oh, that was rough, you know. And actually, some of the action in that scene afterwards was a little rough.
Yeah, the problem when you're photographing and you're doing action, like in that page you're talking about, the page facing it, somebody gets punched, and it doesn't look like a punch at all.
No, there was a storytelling issue there.
Yeah, that's what comes from photographing and not actually drawing the art.
Agreed.
That was the stuff I had problems with a lot. I don't know. I just don't. I got to get the omnibus out and see what the deal was with Daredevil, because it seemed to work for Daredevil, but not for this.
You're just saying it doesn't work right away, or it doesn't work for you.
It doesn't work for me.
But would you give it, though?
I gave it a four. I like the story a lot. Yeah.
I haven't made my mind up yet on this one. And I know that you were talking to me earlier when you said that some people on this podcast may not like...
Yeah, that's what I guess. I thought you were going to be all over it.
Like, I don't really like when the characters look at me and do the narration that way. I see that as a different way. I mean, really... You could have taken the tail off those balloons and then they just become captions. But then you've used up a lot of pages with the character just looking at you and telling you that stuff where you didn't necessarily need to do that.
I felt this weird connection to her, though.
And that's,
I mean, she's looking at me, you know.
And that's valid.
And also, she's got short hair.
Yeah. Plus, something's going to happen.
And a belly shirt.
They said, you know, this is just the beginning. You're gonna help me do this. So clearly, he's telling a different story you couldn't tell with just captions. And there's a reason for the talking.
I'm curious. Yeah. I'm very curious. I think one of the things that's interesting about this book is that, like, I don't really know what it's about yet. I can't tell you what it's about. This is like...
Well, this is a pilot episode, yeah.
It's not even. It's a first act, really.
Yeah. It's not even a first act. I feel like this is like an issue zero.
It's a cold open.
Yeah.
Is what it is, to be honest, because that's the issue form and that's how it works. But I don't quite know what it is. And, you know, the other thing is interesting is that it feels like... I'm surprised this is Bendis. If you were to tell me this is Bendis, I would be like, wow, I thought it was somebody much younger.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I was like, ooh, Bendis is angry at the world.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's weird because you know he's not. you know what I mean? Like, we've spent enough time listening to him talk that he doesn't seem like he's particularly angry at the world. So, and that's not a criticism, but it means that he's actually writing a character that is different than him, which is good. Which is, you know, different than a lot of people do. They just write themselves into all these different characters.
Yeah,
and I don't feel like this is him. So on the one hand, that's kind of impressive. On the other hand, I'm not terribly interested. I'm not all that angry at the world.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, yeah.
not for these reasons.
But you don't need to be angry at the world. I mean, that's part of the story.
Well, there's an economic collapse and an oil gush and all kinds of things to be angry about.
Yeah, this feels more like when I was 20 years old and I was like, oh man, cops are racist. You know, then I felt a different kind of anger at the world. Like when I was a skater and I was a kid and I was pissed off at everything. I don't feel like that.
And you were a local drug dealer?
Yeah. No, that was the writer. Yes, I'm also in the book.
Well, that's the other little bit, too, is that apparently you're freelancing in Portland as a local news reporter, which is a glimpse of your future, perhaps.
It could be. Yeah. How lame would it be if I moved to Portland, never having...
I didn't know. I just didn't know that you and Bennis were this tight.
Well, early in the day, someone was like, hey, is that you in Scarlet? And I was like, no. Bennis definitely does not know who I am. I know this for a fact because there's been a lot of word balloons where John will go, hey, you know, Josh Flanagan wrote this, and Ben is like, yeah.
It's just nothing.
I'm totally fine with that. This is not like some ad, but I'm like, he's not putting.
Well, and that's the thing. I think he vaguely knows us as an entity, but yes. I don't think he'd walk right by you on the street.
No. Oh, totally. And that's and again.
Or at a convention.
Or a convention. He might vaguely recognize me, but that's only because I'm the one who always annoys him at the conventions.
Right. So basically, like, it's an interesting book. I don't think I would have made it my pick of the week. I do want to read more because I'm almost interested in this just from a craft perspective to see, like, what does Bendis have in him at this point? What's coming out of him? And I'm really interested in that.
Yeah, and that's me too, you know? Yeah.
Are we sick of that bridge yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, Portland, all right, enough. Yeah, I thought the same thing, yeah.
Also, you know, the cover is pretty great. I wish she had drawn – I mean, it looks like the cover's more drawn than the inside. Why didn't he do that style?
Is that Maliv?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. But I feel like it mixed a little because that last two pages, I think, is a little like that.
I feel like this is older. She's like, this is like an older image. Like, they drew this a long time ago.
The idea, like the spec idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got for us, Ron?
All right. So after moving on to Scarlet number one, we are now going to enter into the segment of the show where we just talk about number one issues.
Through no fault of our own.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. More number one issues to talk about. The runner-up for Pick of the Week for me was Avengers The Children's Crusade, the Alan Heinberg, Jimmy Chung book, which if it was Pick of the Week, it would have purely been on two things. I love Jimmy Chung, and I want to marry him and make him draw for me the rest of his life, which is a little creepy.
A little bit.
You can keep him next to McKelvey in my basement.
Yeah, well, I've already got him, actually.
I don't want to be in this conversation. I want to go.
It's just things that dudes do, Josh.
It's two guys in a basement. Nobody needs to know. His Magneto on that last page was nice. Also, for some reason, Alan Heinberg can write these Young Avenger characters like nobody else can.
Sure.
There he is. Yeah.
So it was really good. That said, it was the first issue, and it didn't really wow me. It didn't really knock my socks off. You know?
Yeah. So it was a strong four, I thought. Yeah. I had two weird thoughts about the book. One was, and I never do this, but I was trying to figure out when it happened. Because Captain America was Steve Rogers, but it happened after Siege.
If you read my article about this from the press conference, they said that this takes place after Siege, takes place now, but it's admittedly Cap and Iron Man don't match up, and sorry.
I don't really care. it bothered me.
Yeah. I'm actually cool with that, because this Captain America doesn't work if it's Bucky.
Yes.
It doesn't.
It's got to be Steve.
The story changes completely, so that's...
That was just a brief glimmer. The one thing that I caught that I thought of and I couldn't shake was it was weirdly constructed in that the story opens with the Young Avengers fighting these bad guys, and Captain America and Iron Man and Ms. Marvel show up to help, and Wiccan, who is maybe the son of Scarlet Witch, sends all the bad guys into a coma with a blast, very much like House of M blast. So they get all freaked out. They tell Wiccan they want to bring him back to the Avengers tower to study him. They bring him back, and he immediately says, no, I'm out of here, and he leaves, and he gets home, and by the time he's home, Captain America's beating him home, and he says, no, you got to come back with me, so they go back to the tower, he's there for about 2 seconds, the Avengers break him out again, and then they go back to the tower. There's a lot of, like...
A lot of back and forth,
There's a lot of circular time wasted between going from the tower to somewhere else.
But if all that...
Immediately back to the tower.
But if all that didn't happen, we didn't get the excellent scene of Captain America hailing a cab.
Right.
Just like, really?
What, you want to take the subway?
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, was fun, yes, was I would like
they
to see that.
They kept going from place to place, back and forth. It was just weird for no reason.
Yeah, it's a good
But other
point.
Than that, it was good. The art was fantastic.
The art was beautiful. I love them. Oh, so good. So 9 issues over the next 18 months in the story. Have fun with that.
What's wrong with that? I have no problem with that.
It's 2 years.
I don't understand that critique because if it was an 18-issue book, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I know, but I get double. All right, whatever.
People say, "Well,
we don't have time for this."
Yes, we do. It's our own show. We can go as long as we want.
Oh, says the time cop.
You're Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Sure.
So yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I it's tough. It's tough. I just love. I'd hate to see this get delayed, super, super delayed.
Well, if it gets much delayed beyond that, then that's more problem of.
I think it's that when an issue comes out once every 2 months, it's hard to keep track.
Yeah, exactly.
I do. I got a lot of.
I have no problem with that. It just it's rather more like it's just the you know, like 9 issues. That's that for me. A 9-issue series should be done within a year. I feel like.
Well, they better be good.
Yeah. Anyway, so Connor, was your pick of the week Batman Odyssey number one?
Actually, I haven't made a pick of the week yet. I don't know what it is.
Oh, really? Okay.
You have to, by the end of the show, you have to tell us.
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to be randomly choosing Jonah Hex. I have 3 theories about Batman Odyssey number one. It's by Neil Adams. He wrote it and drew it. He wasn't originally supposed to write it, but ended up not happening with Frank Miller, so he ended up writing and drawing.
Surprise. Can you say wacky?
This is... I have 3 theories. And okay, first of all, it's early in the morning. I can't remember all the theories. But...
It's noon, everyone. It's not 8 o'clock.
If you go to bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's early in the morning. It felt to me very much like you could have called this Batman Forever.
Yes.
It felt like a creator who is just do what you want and don't worry about it. Because it's very much not in the DCU. It seems to be in an alternate world that Neil Adams has created on his own. Which I'm totally fine with, because if anyone should be allowed to just run free, it should be Neil Adams and do whatever he wants.
Crazy Neil Adams.
it's either that, or it's going to make sense in the end, and there's reason for the Odyssey title. I mean, I think it's too early to tell. My guess is it's just Neil Adams doing whatever he wants. He probably doesn't even read the modern comics. Doesn't know what's going on.
Of course
with
he doesn't. You think
probably?
I don't want to make any definitive statements. I feel like I'm
stuck behind him in line all the time at Midtown. He's like, oh, man, I got to get out of here and back to work. Just
plus, you can't see around his giant head, so you can't tell how long the line is.
It's expanding.
This was Neil Adams just running free, doing a Batman story in his own world with his own continuity, with his own characters. He's got Dick Grayson wearing the Tim Drake Robin suit, which he did design, so I understand that's why he's using it.
Yeah. The Batmobile's a Corvette.
Yeah, I liked it because it was so out there. I think I liked it the same way that you like X-Men Forever.
Yeah, yeah.
In that it was crazy.
I made a last-minute audible on this one. I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I know it's going to be real pretty, but it's not going to... I was like, it's not going to make
gorgeous.
Sense.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I'm sure.
The man still got it. He still got it.
I figure I'll check it out.
Yeah.
If we hadn't had the site blow up and I couldn't add to the panels post, there would have been at least 10 or 11 panels I could have pulled out of this book to put in the best panels for my fanboy. This was gorgeous. Some of those fantastic Neil Adams layouts.
Yeah.
The two-page diagonal spreads, the hands coming at you in the foreground.
He's still got it going on?
He's still got it. He's definitely
He's 69
still got it.
Years old, and he's still drawing better than most people that draw comics.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really amazing.
Now, one book, I was at the store, and they were like, you're going to buy Shadowland? And I actually laughed in the guy's face.
Really? Did you not buy it?
No, fuck no.
Oh.
Why are you so angry?
I'm not. It's just we lambast the state of Daredevil and how bad that once great corner of the Marvel Universe is. I don't even know.
I just stopped reading it. I don't know if it's bad or not. I just said I'm going to walk away from this for a while. I can't tell you if it's bad or not.
Billy Tan's the artist on this.
Is he?
Event. Yeah.
But is Billy Tan the one we hate, or is this the
we hate both of them?
We hate both of them. Okay.
I'm not. Don't say I'm hating any.
Josh hates both of them. He told me once.
Which is the one that did Batman?
Philip Tan did Batman.
So this is not that.
No,
I don't like that one more than this.
This is the guy who did New Avengers.
Right, yeah. I don't mind this one. I think the Batman one is worse. But anyway, I bought it. Am I the only one? Josh, did you get it? Or?
No.
So I'm the only one who got it. I actually kind of enjoyed it. I didn't think it was that bad.
You know, like the thing was at the end of whenever I stopped Daredevil, I think it was right around when Diggle took over, and I'd read the first couple, and I was like, it's okay, and I was like, I'm going to just walk away from this one.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was kind of interesting, but hey, do you like it?
It was all right. I mean, admittedly, you know,
it was all right. Isn't exactly a ringing endorsement.
Well, no. I mean, I did enjoy it. I mean, Daredevil's in a new costume, so you got that going for you.
Oh,
he's in a black costume now that looks right out of the 90s.
It's a callback to the Hulk show.
Yeah, and it ends with him stabbing Bullseye in the same pose as Bullseye stabbing Elektra with the Psy. So
Josh, will you pay $6 now?
You just fucked me out of it completely. If I had known that was in there,
but
I'm like,
that
no.
That said, I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. It wasn't. I mean, like basically, what happened was that Bullseye leveled a building in Hell's Kitchen, and so Matt and the Hand built a Chinese style tower to kind of show Hell's Kitchen that Daredevil is watching, and Bullseye breaks out of jail and faces off.
Hey, you gotta come down here. It's a code violation. You can't have that up in here. Come on.
He faces off with the Hand ninjas and goes right through him. Then him and Daredevil have a fight, and it ends with Daredevil stabbing him. Power Man, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist try to help Daredevil, but Daredevil says, "Will you swear allegiance to the Hand?" And they're like, and Luke is like, "That'll be a no." So like,
see, this is not a story I'm interested in reading.
But as I said, I found it enjoyable. I did like there's a 2-page spread where they're calling Hell's Kitchen Shadowland now. And there's a shot of everyone kind of reacting, and there's, you know, the Kingpin in Midtown, and then the Punisher on the High Line, and then, you know, Spider-Man in Battery Park, and then Moon Knight was in Inwood, and I laughed. What's Moon Knight doing in Inwood?
Can you see the Hand going to local realtors? Excuse us. Would you mind changing the name? It's not Hell's Kitchen anymore.
It's Shadowland.
It's Clinton.
No, they dropped the Clinton.
No, it's Shadowland.
But yeah, so I don't know. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, and I'm gonna. I don't know if I'm gonna buy all the one shots and everything, but I'll buy the main series anyway. So moving on. So did you guys bust a nut over Steve Rogers Super Soldier number one?
I wanted to.
And what happened?
It was okay.
Yeah,
it was Ed Brubaker writing Steve Rogers is usually a good thing, and it was. If there's any character that Dale Eaglesham's giant hulky formula is allowed to do, it's Steve Rogers. He sort of made everybody super bulky. It was kind of interesting. I liked it.
I thought Eaglesham's art wasn't as nice as it was in Fantastic Four.
I thought it was fine.
I think that's why you get it on time.
Yeah. Well, no. I think because he did the same thing where it doesn't look like he inked it, and then Andy Troy did the colors on his pencils, and I think that you see that if anyone questioned how good Paul Mounce is, I think this shows it. Not that it was bad, but it just didn't look as sharp. It didn't look.
I liked that a lot, except for the flashback to skinny Steve Rogers and
skinny
I was thinking
Tyler
that too.
Paxton with their giant heads and their skinny bodies. I laughed
because they look like Holocaust survivors.
Yeah, and they're skinny and they're skinny. I mean,
yeah,
it's ridiculous.
But their heads are normal size.
Yeah,
they look like a video game cheat.
Look at the giant necks. I can't stop looking at Steve Rogers' neck. I love this. I thought this really reminded me of the old Captain America book before Bucky came on. I'm sad that it's only a miniseries. I'm sad we're only going to get 4 issues. This was one of my favorite books from the week.
I will say that this convinced me a little bit that the costume's kind of dumb.
Oh, really dumb?
Because I was just like, why don't you just wear black? Like, if you're a super secret agent, wear black.
Just wear a turtleneck or something.
Because he's sticking out a lot more because of it, and I thought, which is odd. I mean, it's kind of interesting. He's playing back with the whole origin of Captain America, Erskine. I'll read more of it. I wish it was a little better, but I liked it enough.
This just made Miss Cap being Cap in his book. This is the book I want to be reading, not the other book. Which is good, but it doesn't excite me as much as this one does.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Oh, good. They've restarted X-Men.
Hey, Ron, I bought X-Men.
You bought X-Men number one?
Yeah.
So the first new X-Men title since 1991, or first new X-Men or adjectiveless X-Men title. They went to the old 1960s logo, which I liked.
Loved it.
I really kind of enjoyed this.
I did too.
Yeah, I mean, despite my grumbling that this is coming out before Second Coming finished, so this basically explains how the X-Men are getting involved in this whole vampire thing. And if you're groaning at the vampire X-Men thing, the X-Men fought Dracula back in the 70s or 80s. Like, Dracula's been a villain in the past in the X-Men. So there is a, like, Storm had this whole thing with Dracula where she, you know, she got bitten and she became his servant, kind of like Renfield, you know, like, it was, Dracula exists in the X-Men mythos, so this totally makes sense from that standpoint, and, you know, Medina's art was good. There was nothing wrong with this book.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, I'm not a regular X-Men reader, and I was never lost. Actually, the only thing I was lost about was who was that doctor that was treating
Dr. Nemesis. Dr. Nemesis. Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, it was totally accessible. I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. You understood what was going on. I like the vampire aspect. It's different. It's not the same. I'm not reading any other story where superheroes are fighting masses of vampires.
I thought there was a real clever. I mean, basically what happened was is that a vampire walked into Union Square in San Francisco in daylight and exploded, and in doing that, infected, his blood landed on people, infected everyone around him with this manufactured strain of vampire blood, and Jubilee got infected, and so now Jubilee's becoming a vampire, which is interesting because that character was dead. It had no, she lost her power, she had nowhere to go, so it brings her back into the fold, and that's a real clever use of the vampire power kind of thing, you know, like the, you know, by making a vampire bomb is kind of interesting, you know, and yeah, you know, they immediately made an army in San Francisco, you know. I thought it was interesting. I like that they're folding in science into the X-Men, and they're trying to pull it off. You know, I think it's all neat.
I think Paul Cornell got gypped.
How so?
He'd had the whole vampire story already.
Oh, true. Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's the same kind of thing, but vampires weren't the big thing then, and now they are, so they're kind of doing it again.
Yeah.
Same editor, Nick Lowe on both of them.
Possibly.
Not really angry about it or anything, but it's interesting that it didn't work a year and a half ago because it wasn't the X-Men.
Yeah.
Well, that's the power of the brand.
True enough. Can't argue with that.
Yeah, so I liked it. I'm on board. I'll dig it.
My comic book store tried to sell me that. I was like, no, I don't know.
No. So in addition to the X-Men world, X-Women number one came out, a one-shot by Chris Claremont with art by Milo Manara. And Milo, for those who don't know, Milo Manara is a European artist who is known as a master of, you know.
There's a glowing tribute in the back from Joe Quesada about him.
Explains who he is, yeah.
Calls him the best of us.
Yep. And it's true. I mean, he some of his stuff that he's done in Europe is just downright amazing, and I don't think I'd ever see him on an X-Men book ever.
I bought this because, for two reasons. Well, I guess it's the same reason. One is you've got crazy Chris Claremont writing a story drawn by Milo Manara, who's known for his erotica in Europe. So there's no way I'm not checking that out.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It did not disappoint.
It did. And the thing is that, like, Claremont wrote a decent script.
It felt very old school Marvel. Yeah,
it wasn't as bloated as his scripts tend to be. I thought it was lean where it needed to be. It told the story well. It got it across. And Manara's art is just beautiful.
After the first three pages, were very text heavy.
Yeah,
The first page specifically, I was tired.
But then by the end of it, I was thinking about how text light it was.
Yes, it got really sort of sparse.
Now, you know, did we need to have, you know, the characters bound with bamboo gags?
Well, it is a Milo Manara story. Yeah. It's an erotica artist doing an X-Men women story, so it's going to be that way. It's okay to have these things as special one-shots.
Right.
If every comic was like this, that'd be a problem, but this is a special case. It's an erotic artist doing an X-Men story, so it's going to be erotically tinged, and that's fine. You don't have to like it. But
everything in my life is erotically tinged. Are you going to drink that? You don't want to.
I don't know that Kitty Pryde's going to wear a thong to the beach, but maybe, you know, but in this instance, she will.
Maybe she's empowered, you know?
It was really gorgeous. I mean, the erotic poses and stuff aside, I mean, look at his background. Look at the way he draws bows. I mean, everything. He is just, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great.
Is he saying we are not as nearly uptight as you, you know? You're very uptight, America.
It's,
you know,
she's
this song. You say she's chafed. I say she's sexy. I don't know.
It was beautiful. I loved it.
It was definitely fun. I wouldn't want to read this all the time, but it was a nice one shot.
Do you read Thor, the Mighty Avenger number one?
I think
so. Thor, the Mighty Avenger number one from Roger Langridge, Chris Somni, and Matt Wilson on colors.
Langridge.
You just like saying that, don't you?
Yes. I didn't read this, though.
Watch your language. It was, I wasn't really sure what to expect. I knew that it wasn't like a typical Thor book. It's really an all-ages book in a way that we don't see very much anymore. When I say all-ages book, it's not a kid's book, but it's not like an adult book. There's no continuity. You just sort of start from scratch, and it's almost like, I don't know if it's like an Elseworlds story, whatever you want to call it, but...
My store had it stocked with the kids' books.
Yeah, and I can see that. It actually felt like an older book to me, and I kind of liked it for that. It was a little simplistic, I suppose. Like, it was a little melodramatic, I think is a good way to put it. The story interested me. I was kind of curious about it. Basically, like, this woman is the head of the Nordic arts wing of her museum, and this homeless Thor comes in, and he's talking Norse and making no sense. And then she runs into him later, and he's learned English over the course of a couple of days. But she's also breaking up with her boyfriend at the same time. So, like, it was almost like young adults, I guess, because it was just a little melodramatic, and it wasn't written like most, I guess I want to say, adult comics. But I liked the story. I liked the idea of it. I'm a big fan of Chris Somni. We know that. We talked about it earlier. It's funny because it was a different feel than a lot of his stuff. It was very bright. His lines weren't nearly as thick. There wasn't as much sort of blacks and shadow as
Not
he does.
Not shadow heavy like he does, yeah.
It also was a little, it felt a little thin, I guess, in that sense. But I like his Thor. His Thor is like a thinner, sort of younger looking Thor, and he's a little less, you get a little less bravado about him. But it was fun. I'm curious where it'll go next.
I really enjoyed it. It was one of the best Thor comics I've read in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I was into it.
one of the only Thor comics I read in a while. But it was, you're right, it was all ages, but it wasn't too kiddie at all. In fact, I thought it was surprised. I was going into it thinking it would be kiddie because of the way it was stocked at my store, but it wasn't. There was a lot of sort of subtleness happening and a lot of, not adult themes, but, you know, there was a lot of, you know, there was a drunken brawl. There was you know, the relationship problems. This was not for, like, 8-year-olds at all. It was, anybody could enjoy it, but there's a lot for everyone.
I think if I was, like, 12, I would have read this and felt like I was reading something really mature.
Yeah.
And I would have liked it. And I did. So, but it was...
Well, speaking of mature, if you told me at any point in the past 20 years I'd be buying Brigade number 1 from Image again, I would have laughed.
Ha!
But sure enough, here I am, Brigade number 1. I loved Brigade when it came out in 1992. It was part of the whole Rob Liefeld verse, you know, Youngblood, you know, kind of offshoot from there. And for some reason, Brigade really, I just liked it. Because I think it was like one of the first number 1s I got from the Image, you know, the Image kind of starting, because I came onto that a little late. I missed the first wave. And I just laughed because this had Marat Michaels doing the art, who I don't think I've seen art from him since Brigade. Yeah, exactly. And his art wasn't that bad. And this was, I mean, this, if you told me this book was published in 1993, I would have believed you. That's all I have to say about that. But I did buy it. I just want to let everyone know that I did buy it.
Well, we were all wondering.
Yeah, exactly.
We've been talking about comics forever. I feel like we should probably talk about the sponsor, because they're making this possible for you. This episode is brought to you by Ugly Americans. If you guys are attending San Diego Comic-Con, and apparently hundreds of thousands of you are, I think everybody listening or reading comics goes at this point. That's why there's no hotel rooms. You want to go to the Ugly Americans panel on July 23rd. That's Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. in room 25 ABC. The panel will be featuring Randy Perlstein. He's the voice of Leonard, who's an old drunken wizard, in case you didn't know. Matt Oberg is the voice of Mark Lilly, the social worker. And Kurt Metzger, the voice of Randall Skeffington, who is Mark's zombie roommate. As well as the executive producers David M. Stern and Dan Powell, and the series creator Devin Clark, and even more people. This is an animated series on Comedy Central. I'm sure you've heard about it. You can catch a sneak peek of the upcoming season. That comes out in October. And one audience member, this is neat, one audience member will be picked and drawn into an upcoming episode. So if you go to the panel, you can be in an episode, which is actually really cool.
That's really kind of
cool. That's very cool. Don't miss that their San Diego Comic-Con panel, and make sure to follow Ugly Americans at facebook.com/UglyAmericans and twitter.com/UglyAmericans. Check out on our website, the top on a red post, you can see the Ugly Americans Field Guide comic book. All sorts of helpful advice on an apocalyptic future covered in zombies, demons, and such. That kind of thing. Also, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's going to be going on with Ugly Americans at Comic-Con. Including there's a big event going on at the House of Blues comedy night, and all sorts of things that we're going to tell you a little bit more about as we get closer, and some giveaways, some other things that are going to be going on. So make sure to check out Ugly Americans, and if you're in San Diego, you don't want to miss that panel, and we thank them for sponsoring the show.
Cool.
Am I the only one left reading Batman and Robin? Is it just me at this point, or
no?
I'm gone. I bailed.
Are you kidding?
This is fantastic.
Are you kidding? Crowbar. Crowbar.
I feel like I feel like it's all starting to come together. Obviously it is, but starting to feel like a real payoff from having read all these issues, plus having read the issues in the previous run from Grant Morris. He's obviously got this master plan, and it's all coming to a head here with the return of Dr. Hurt, who is impersonating Thomas Wayne. Mm-hmm. The Frazier Irving art was just gorgeous.
You know, like, sometimes I like Frazier Irving and sometimes I don't, and I think whatever it is, the story has to be right for him, and this was right for him.
Yes.
In certain parts really, really worked well. I'm shocked that you didn't just say that this is your pick of the week outright.
Well, because I haven't decided. There's a lot of great books. It's up there.
Well, it's got
to
be.
A lot of people were saying it was. A lot of people were saying good things about it.
I mean, really, the moment in this, and again, ever since the first issue of Batman and Robin, I've been saying this all along, the best thing about this book is the relationship between Dick and Damian, and it came out in this one where Dick is like, oh crap, we have to go back. He could kill him. And he's like, what do you mean? He said, I'm not worried about the Joker. I'm worried about it's the Joker I'm worried about.
I'm not worried about Damian. I'm worried about the Joker. Yeah.
And then they cut into this room and you see Damian there with all the swagger in the world that this little kid can muster. And he pulls out a crowbar and he just whacks the Joker in the head. And
that was a great panel.
Oh my God.
That was not a best panel.
Because it was in the review that Paul did earlier. It's already on the site. Which was, by the way, read Paul's review of this book. Really excellent review. But besides that, this is just, I mean, this was the best issue of this in a while. I mean, they've all been really good, but this one really hit emotionally.
Did you notice that when they were driving to the Batcave, Batman was driving on the English side of the car?
I did not.
And then on the way back, he was riding on the American side?
Let's not talk about
it. You mean the right side?
Correct.
I've been watching a lot of Top Gear, and I get completely confused now.
Scalps 39 was great. I love that he keeps weaving in these characters that are both old and new and telling different sides of them, and then now that you think that things have stabilized, and then things just don't stabilize.
I was reading this and I kept exhaling, just like, oh. And I by the time I got to the end of it, I decided, I was like, this is the best comic being published today. I've decided to just go ahead and outright claim that, because 39 issues in, and I'm riveted every single time. The last issue was fantastic. The one before that was fantastic, and this one was fantastic. This was my pick of the week. That would have been it.
Wow, interesting.
Oh. People would have loved that one.
Yeah.
Avengers: The Origin number 4, Joe Casey, Phil Noto. I love this series.
Oh, it's so good.
So pretty.
And I feel like nobody's talking about it, and it's a pain in the ass.
It's so good.
It doesn't matter, Josh.
I thought I mentioned it when it came out, didn't I? I talked about the first issue, didn't I?
We talked about the first issue. We talked about the last one.
Yeah, so fine. Good.
It's so good, and it's so fun. And this is like, for whatever reason, Phil Noto totally works in this one.
Yes.
And watching Ant-Man and the Wasp fly in and out of Iron Man's old clunky suit is hilarious. But for me, the highlight of this was the conversations between Thor and Loki. And I was just like, that's some good Thor speak. Like,
I would buy Thor if Joe Casey wrote Thor.
Oh, my God. I mean, they could just, and I feel like he could do that all day. But just like, it's just them talking to each other and him just nailing the hell out of that ridiculous Thor speak and that bravado and that, you know, Asgardian blowhardness.
Warrior macho-ness, yeah.
Oh, I was like, that's awesome, because I can't do that. I want to be able to do that. That's great. I had so much fun reading that. Also, another fun book. I don't know if you noticed, but G.I. Joe number 20 has been like, I think, the third or fourth issue in a row of that series. It's been really good. I don't know if anybody jumped off or came back on, but it's been a lot of fun lately. Highly tactical.
Yes.
Like Chuck Dixon's
really getting into the military aspect of it.
And that's when it gets really good. And Shipwreck was in it, which is hilarious always. But he's not fun. He's not played for jokes, or he's not played
for
laughter.
He should be, though.
Nah, I don't care.
See, you got to read his word balloons like in the voice, right?
The gay Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
That's what Shipwreck is. He's gay Jack Nicholson. It was just another, like, it was a really fun issue. And they have been fun, and so make sure to keep checking these out. But I was impressed. I gave it 5 stars, and I don't know if I've done that for one of those in a while. So, great book.
You know, it also was a 5-star book, Jonah Hex 57.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yeah,
it's almost like they upped the ante post movie, and it just, oh, this was the classic little kids telling tales about Jonah Hex issue. Uh-huh. And their tall tales, and they involved Jonah Hex bouncing bullets off of canyon walls, and then.
We had this. There was two of these in the Best of the Weekend panels.
Yeah, and then
you
know what I liked about this issue the best was that Jonah Hex comes to town, and we saw a side of the story we never see, which is the townspeople sort of when they hear that hiding away. We can't go into town. Jonah Hex is there. Something bad might happen. So they sneak to town and they watch him fight a bad guy with the help of Scalp Hunter and the Two Gun Twins and Cinnamon and like every major Batman.
You know what?
Major character.
Forget all of that. For the first time in 57 issues, he ran out of bullets and he tackled a horse.
It was pretty awesome. This was one of the best issues in a while. I think we can put Scalped and Jonah Hex in my top five, like, for good.
Wow.
And then Scalp Hunter, so we're even? Hell no. And he punches him in the face. I loved this. That was fantastic.
Awesome.
On the other hand, Ron, I thought Demo ended on a clunker.
Oh, au contraire! And on a quieter week, this could have been a pick of the week contender for me.
I thought this was the worst.
This one. I was gonna say this for the first time in a long time. I got choked up. Like this one. This one played way less on the power idea, and this was totally a relationship book.
What do you mean way less? It's all about the powers. Powers overwhelm the story.
I know, but in this one,
it got too complex.
It's a couple. It's a couple that are together, like married, like a long term relationship couple. And when they're actually physically proximity away from each other, then they start to bleed. They start to get hurt, basically. So the more time they spend apart, the more physical pain they get put in. But it just goes through the agony of a long term relationship and being in the same house of somebody and not being able to stand them and keeping your distance and going quiet, but then having something happen. And you know, spooning again and cuddling again and realizing that you need the other person. It just went through all those emotions in such a economy of space in just 22 pages. It totally got across what the intention of the story was, and just was a gut punch.
That was a clunker.
I liked it. I liked it.
So now when somebody wrote, "You guys said," that can't be correct. because you both disagree.
Okay, fair enough. You're really hung up on that. Anyway, X-Force 13, we're coming to the end of Second Coming, and this is shaping up to be one of the best, again, this is the best X-Men crossover in a while. Cable unleashed the techno-organic virus and opened up a portal to let all the people in the future to come back to the present, and in doing so, exploded, so Cable is dead. As I predicted, Cable would die. And basically, Hope has now unleashed her power, and she's got, like, everybody's power. Which is, as far as at least what it looks like, she shot eye blasts, she had armor, she was flying, she was, you know, looked very strong, a little bit of a Phoenix signature, in, you know, kind of explosion around her. This issue was really, really strong. A lot of action, a lot of fun. I love this event so far. Good times.
Whew.
Whew, that was a lot of books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good books. Yeah. It was like one of those books, one of those weeks where I was like, I didn't have time to read books, but I didn't mind because every time I read one, I was like, that was fun.
Yeah,
that was there was other 5-star books I didn't even talk about.
Yeah,
yep.
Ugh,
no time for love. I had 22 books, I think 23 books. Yeah, a lot of books.
Yeah, it's insane. You, the user community, read books as well, and so we want to highlight a couple of those. First one comes from Chris Flinchbaugh, who reviewed the Brightest Day, the Adam Special number 1, and he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, even though it says 4, but he gave it a 5.
Oh.
And this is written by Jeff Lemire with art by Mahmoud Asrar. And he says, picked up the Adam Special based on enjoying Ray Palmer's character and perspective in the Blackest Night book, and the previous press sparked my interest further. Writer Jeff Lemire has been praised heavily on more than a few podcasts and in general comic book press for his Sweet Tooth series, so it seemed to me that for this special at least it was a safe bet. Even with some decent expectations, this book wowed me. I was completely absorbed in the tale and invested in the mysteries that Ray encounters. Everything about this book was just right. The penciling, the use of shadows, more the inker, kept the art in more realistic realm, a la Infantino-esque Silver Age, but not nostalgic, and with a modern sense of framing that didn't sacrifice the story at all for weird angles. I'm now seriously considering picking up Adventure Comics every month just for the Adam backup. A perfect restart to this character and entry point for the curious. And I forgot to buy this, and I'm so mad because I love Mahmoud Asrar and I love Jeff's work, so I need to go back to the store and get it.
Did you not check your Fanboy pull list when you were in the store?
There were some distractions in my store this week, so
I see.
Let's just leave it at that.
Well, too bad. You missed out. Next time. Pick it up next time.
Yeah.
Silver Age Tom wrote about Casanova number 1, gave a story a 5 out of 5, and the art a 5 out of 5, and 1.3% of the fan base made this their pick of the week. And Silver Age Tom says, like a lot of people, I missed Casanova the first time around. I don't think I've been collecting comics at the time, and even if I had, I wouldn't have thought to pick this quirky little comic. But now Matt Fraction is one of those popular writers at Marvel. With an Eisen under his belt, Mr. Fraction decided to clean up the old indie book he did with Gabriel Ba. So the question is this re-release justified? My opinion, absolutely. This is an oddball book with a great art sensibility with kooky story that may take a couple of reads to let it sink in, but the time taken to savor the book is fully worth it. This adventure follows Casanova Quinn and some psychedelic multiversal hijinks that are so quirky and fun that recapping the plot won't do it any justice. Matt Fraction's writing is surreal and smart, which is perfectly married to Gabriel Ba's art. The new color shines with its simplicity and seems to be a welcome addition to the book. Also, the backup art with art by Fabio Moon is a welcome delving into one of the issue's side characters. All in all, this is a book that I recommend to any sci-fi fan, and certainly to fans of the Moon Brothers. This is a great comic and a serious pick of the week contender for me.
I gotta admit, I struggled with whether to get this or not because I have this in hardcover from Image when it originally came out. But I did pick it up because I wanted to see Dave Stewart did the colors, and of course, and it looked great. And it was a great package, great presentation. The book looks so much different in color now, but it is a re-release, so you know.
It doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
It was a while ago. Yeah, it was like at least five years.
I know, but you know.
It's also interesting to see the brothers' art as it was 5 years ago, you know.
Uh-huh.
Cool. So go to ifanboy.com/comics, and that's where you do your pull list, and you can rate and review your books and do all that stuff. And if you wanted to catch up on Casanova without buying these re-releases, you could go to InStock Trades and look and maybe find the trades, even though I think they're out of print. Bad segue. InStock Trades is an excellent place to find in-print trade paperbacks and collected editions. You can save up to 37% off on most items. They've got free shipping on orders over $50. They've got over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock and ready to order that are all in-print and available. They got new releases listed every Wednesday, and your order normally ships within 48 hours. So if you go to www.instocktrades.com, you can spend all your money on trade paperbacks.
All right, then. We have to move quickly. We're going to the emails. First email is from Cesar Rodriguez. Hey, guys. Love the site and had a question for you. As far as I know, but do feel free to correct me, you guys haven't mentioned Love and Rockets in any podcast, which surprised me since I know it's a very important comic and that many regard highly. I recently started reading comics for the first time after hearing how great it was for ages. I remember Sonya Harris used to bring it up in just about every other article she wrote. And so far, I'm enjoying it, though I can't help but feel it's a bit overrated. Hate that word. But we'll stick with it since I've heard it gets better over time. So what are your two cents on the series? Thanks.
We've definitely mentioned it, although we've done a lot of shows.
Yeah, we have. We haven't gone in depth on it. Maybe we should do a video show on it. But I think
No.
Well, why? Because you guys haven't read a lot of it. Right?
No, because I read it and couldn't finish it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't have 9 years to read it all to the point when it gets good.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, I disagree with that. I don't think you got to stick with it until it gets good. Like, I've always been enamored with it. I've always loved it.
Well, that's not good then, because I didn't like what I started to read.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
It's not for everybody.
Yeah, possibly.
It's not. I got the re-release when it came out many years ago, and Maggie Mechanic, and I got halfway through and said, this isn't for me.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I mean, and it is an important work in terms of in terms of indie stuff and their art styles and the Hernandez brothers and all that sort of stuff. But but like any book, you know, Casanova is not for a lot of people. Like, Josh, if I remember, you hated it, right?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah, so I mean, like, not those indie books aren't always for everybody. I don't think it's overrated, though, because purely from an artistic standpoint, it's important.
I hate the term overrated. Yeah. I dismiss it entirely. It's not a criticism. You might not like it. There's some reason that a lot of people – it's not for you. It's not for me. It's whatever. There's some reason that so many people hold it in regard. And it's not like, oh, it sold a billion copies. It isn't that. It's that, like, it was a major milestone in indie comics in the, I guess, the 80s and 90s?
Mainly 80s. Mainly 80s.
You know, it's something that – it also maybe, you know, maybe had to be there at the time. Maybe – whatever, it wasn't for me, but not overrated.
But you understand that it was for others.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. I love it.
That's so good.
There you go.
You're just a poser. You're trying to be cool.
Totally am. I'm overrated. Okay, our next email comes from Tim, also known as Patriot Son on the site, and he says, I know there is a huge difference between the comic book market now and the comic book from the early 90s, but seeing the recent article on iFanboy about the vampire variant covers got me thinking. Why is nearly every book getting a variant cover now? It's not even number one issues. It's every chapter of Second Coming, every issue of The Avengers, every issue of The New Flash, etc. I was thinking the collector days were over, but seeing the shameful Iron Man variant covers of the X-Men that he wasn't in when the movie released makes me think otherwise. If they are collector's items, why does every comic shop mark these issues up to $20 or more? What are your thoughts? Well, they are collector's items.
And there are people who pay for them.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the variant cover is the last bastion of the retailer exclusive kind of thing. Basically, the way it works, or at least the way Marvel does it, I think DC does it as well, but they have a system where if you order a minimum number of issues, you get one variant cover. And so if you order 20 copies of X-Men number 1, you'll get the variant. You get the John Cassidy variant cover, whatever there might be. I don't know if he did one or not. And then those variant covers, because they're so small in quantity, are instantly worth $20, $50, whatever. You know, it sucks. I don't know.
Joe Quesada answered a question about this once, and basically he was like, you know what? It doesn't hurt anybody, and there's a portion of people out there who really like them, and the retailers can make a little more money out from them, so we do it.
Right.
Here's the thing. If you really want the variant cover, but you're not willing to pay for it, then, you know, then you don't want it that bad.
Exactly.
But if somebody's willing to pay for it, then I can't fault the shops for finding a way to make some extra money, you know, based on people willing to pay for it.
Right. I think it's funny because my store at Isotope James, he gets the variants and he sells them for like $2.99 or $3.99 cover price to the biggest fan of that title of his customers. So, like, for example, when that Daredevil 600 variant came out, and there was that ultra exclusive one, and he got it and he gave it to the biggest Daredevil fan at his store. Like, that's a neat way to do it. Not every store can do that. I know there are some stores, like in the Midwest or whatever, that live on eBay and live by these variants, and like, it's a major moneymaker for them. But that it doesn't. Not everybody's doing it. I guess that's the point.
Well, if you go to Midtown in the city, you know, like, you'll see on the shelf there'll be the book, and then next to it will be the bagged and boarded variant cover for like $25.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'm like, but somebody's buying it. I see people pick them up all the time.
Yeah.
If they wanted to, it's like a subculture. Like, I feel like they're not hurting me. So let them do what they want.
To each their own, you know?
Yeah. It's not like it's not like the boom. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like.
No, because back then everyone bought them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have tons of bagged books that were in polybagged with trading cards I never opened. I mean, that's everyone bought those.
And those weren't even variant.
They were. I bought 5 copies of each Robin because they had different covers. I mean, those were variant covers. They just were
right. Like, no, but they weren't as limited. The thing is, now they're in way limited quantities. That's my point. Is that they're, you know, for every 50 copies.
Right.
The point is,
back then everyone bought the variants. Now they're rare.
Yeah,
it's a different thing though.
It's evolved.
Yeah.
don't know. It's an interesting question, but yeah, if you're not interested, don't buy it. But don't, you know, it might be some people, it's their thing. All right, so shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com if you have any questions. We're going to skip the voicemail this week because we went long on talking about the comics. So give us a call at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
If you like this show, you listen to this show and our many other shows every week, you might find yourself wondering, how can you help support these shows that provide you so much free entertainment and make your comic book reading experience better, hopefully? Well, number one, you can click on the banners when they return, hopefully free of malware.
Sorry.
It'll be safe then. Until then.
It wasn't my fault.
You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon.
Wasn't even supposed to be here today.
I know.
He really wasn't. That's the point.
Someone jammed digital gum in our locks.
ifanboy.com/Amazon is what you can do for right now. You can go there and you can, if you're an Amazon shopper, you can click on the Powered by Amazon button. It'll take you on Amazon. Anything you purchase there will help us out. We'll get a little piece of that. And you won't even have to pay anything extra. Amazon will foot us the bill. So do that. I spend all my Amazon money through the Amazon.com/Amazon. I do. That's a lot of Amazons.
It's actually 75% of all Connor's pre-tax income.
Yes.
Amazon.com.
Well, I spend it myself. I get it back. It's a weird circle. You can buy our t-shirts. We got Fear Agent t-shirts. You can check those out at fmway.com/store or designed by Jerome Pena. It's the only Fear Agent t-shirt out there that's sanctioned by Rick Remender. The other ones are all featuring Heath peeing on things, which are not sanctioned. Those are knockoffs.
He hates Ford.
There's also a couple of Battle Pug shirts left, but anyway, check out our t-shirts at fmway.com/store. You can be a member. That's the best way. You can, for $4 a month or $42 a year, $10 a month or $100 a year, you can become an iFanboy member. You get a special prize pack for joining our membership program. You get a comic book, a sticker, a button, a couple of buttons. Actually, you get a couple of stickers now too. And if you get a high level member, you get a t-shirt, which if you're ordering big ones, they're still on order. So you have to hold on a little bit longer for that. But becoming an iFanboy member really helps us out. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Part of what we do at iFanboy is we make podcasts. In addition to this Pick of the Week podcast, we have a podcast called Don't Miss, which comes out every Monday. And if you're not listening to it, you're missing out because we're talking to creators and they're talking about their books they're putting out every week. And it helps you decide if you're going to buy a book when you go to the store. This past week, who was on the show? I'm blanking.
It was Casanova. It was Matt Fraction.
Oh, yeah. How could I forget that? Jesus, yeah. Chris talked to Matt Fraction back at the new Casanova printing. And this Monday, I'm going to be talking to Zeb Wells about New Mutants number 15, the first issue of the fall of the New Mutants storyline. So it'll be the first time we talked to Zeb Wells. I'm excited for that. But that's not the only place where we talk to creators.
Oh, there'd be talksplodes, booksplodes, splodes all over the place. This last week, you may have heard me and Chris Niesman talking to Chris Somney about Thor, the Mighty Avenger, as well as Area 10 and the Mighty, and going way back to his start on Capote in Kansas. Really, really fun conversation. Chris is a fun, cool guy, hell of an artist, and he doesn't sleep much. That's what I know. Next week, I will be talking to Andy Schmidt, editor for IDW. He's also a comic writer, and he runs Comic Experience, which is sort of a school for people who want to know how to make comics.
It sounds like a fantasy baseball camp. The comics experience, you know, like it's like it come to Florida for a week. Well, you'll learn to draw from, you know, like
you put on a giant floral print shirt and hang out with George Perez.
Yeah, but, Herb Trippy.
But I have heard
Denny O'Neill.
Al Milgram.
Danny Fingeroff. But I do know
special guest Jim Shooter.
I do know people who have taken
Marvel's Bobby Chase.
I do know people.
I hope none of these people are dead.
I do know people who have taken Andy's classes, and some of them are getting published. Like it works. So it works.
Yeah, totally. we had call us. It works. We had a thread on the site where you could ask them some questions. So we asked him a bunch of questions from the audience too. So went over all that stuff. It's a nice long conversation. It'll be coming out next week. So look for it.
In a month or so, San Diego Comic-Con.
Month?
2 months? Is it 3 months away?
No.
Oh, fuck.
No. It's Tuesday. A week from Tuesday.
No, it's not a week.
Yeah.
No, it's
not. It is.
It's a week from when people hear the show.
Oh, crap. No, it's like a week and a half from Monday. Yeah, we leave on Tuesday, but the con doesn't start until Wednesday night. So it's a week and a half.
Yeah, but I count when I have to get in a fucking plane.
Dear Lord, yeah.
San Diego Comic Con's coming, so if you're going to be there, we will be there. Say hi. There'll be a post about this, but I'll tell you really quickly. There's going to be a couple of panels that we're going to be appearing on. One's on Thursday, one's on Friday. I don't know which is which.
The Thursday one is the comics podcast panel that Josh is going to be on, and he's going to be on with Suntress from Word Balloon and Jimmy from Comics News Insider. pants from CGS. It's going to be a fun time.
Well, the usual crowd.
Yeah, but there's some newcomers on there as well. So
we get to heckle Josh. It's heckle Josh time.
And then Friday, we'll be moderating a panel about digital comics with our good friend Mia from Graphically, as well as Ben Templesmith and some other cool folks. So
so come on to those panels if you're in San Diego. Also, there's going to be an iFanboy party or meetup. One of the days, we're still locking down details. Check out ifanboy.com. If you're going to be there, that's where all the details will be. But there will be a party meetup thing.
Yes, we want to see you in San Diego.
Come heckle Josh.
Yes.
I'm going to wear sunglasses and act aloof.
So, very excited for San Diego. We're probably more excited for the food, less excited for the walking around the convention center.
I'm more excited to go to San Diego than I've ever been in my life.
For one word, right?
No, out of the house.
Oh, out of the house. Oh,
I don't leave the house.
Oh, I was thinking hodads.
Oh, that's pretty exciting, too. Yeah. But now I get heartburn, so I don't know if it'll work this
way. Oh, God. Jesus Christ. Next thing you know, you're going to be complaining about taxes.
You're sciatica.
Actually. Because I've been looking, and...
Have you seen these gas prices? My God. Anyway, all right, cool.
Baggy pants and loud rap music.
So go to ifanboy.com, and you'll get all the update on San Diego. Post will be going up soon about that. And you can also get my Pick of the Week review, as well as all the in-depth comic book discussion and articles kicking ass on the website these days. If you're not reading all the stuff that goes up every day, you're missing out.
When it's available.
Go to ifanboy.com/about, where you can find links to us on social networks. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/ifanboy. And we do a video show every Wednesday that comes out on ifanboy.com, as well as revision3.com/ifanboy. Last week, we looked at some prequel books that we enjoyed, and apparently it went over very well, from what I could tell, the feedback. People liked the blue outtakes at the end, apparently.
Yeah,
well,
I'm
the whole
so
show
glad you
blue.
Left in swirl stroke. Yeah. Thanks.
Listen, that was the least offensive outtake.
I don't know.
There was a lot of semen discussion.
I don't even recall that shoot. Anyway.
I don't doubt it.
So this
there was a really hilarious 5-minute discussion that was really too dirty for air.
Oh, Jesus. So this week we've got an episode all about origins, like origins of characters. So it's going to be
I didn't think that was the OR word you were going to say.
So come check that out on Wednesday.
So I met the proctologist last week, and he says, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. He told me that. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can send us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Any questions, comments, you want to have something on the show, then make it good. That's what I'm saying to you. Don't ramble on forever. Leave us your name. Tell us where you're from. Wow us, people. Or just keep writing in with your questions. That's fine, too.
And if you like the show, write a review on iTunes. That's how people find it. When they search in comics podcasts, it really helps to have more reviews. So please do. We're doing the push to 1,000. We're not going to check because it takes around 5 minutes to load iTunes, but we're somewhere in the high 600s. So please write some reviews. There's lots of you out there. It takes you 5 minutes. Really would appreciate it. Thank you very much. Even better than that, tell your friends, tell your comic book people, tell your mom, tell everyone. Tell everyone that you meet. It should be the second thing after your name. Tell them about iFanboy. And tell him if you use the swirl stroke or not.
Oh, miserable. Miserable. All right, well. Oh, dear Lord. It wasn't meant to be seen. Oh, we lost them. We lost them.
I should send you guys the really dirty discussion that we couldn't
have. No, please don't. I don't want to revisit it. All right, cool. So,
this is what happens when we get trapped in a room together. It gets blue.
It gets dirty. This is a hell of a week. I don't want to look at a comic book all weekend as I continue my break from the internet. Man, the internet kicked my ass this week. All right, so until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I don't know if I said those things. I may have been under duress.
Doppelganger.
I'm going to go as an LMD.
Yeah, it's an LMD. There you go.
New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. Like a death of the heart. Jesus, where do I start? But you're still the one pool where I'd happily drown. And oh, take me off your mailing list for kids who think it still exists. Yes, for those who think it still exists. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe you're right. Maybe I'm wrong.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.